In the last 10 years, our field has gone from an unknown specialty to a household name. This brings unprecedented opportunities, but we need to rise up to meet them and give our patients the care that they deserve. In order to help others get better, we need to be better. This podcast will help you to become more confident with your patients, more successful in your practice or business, and a leader in pelvic health. And we're gonna have some fun along the way. Join us as we rise together. We're Jesse and Nicole Cozine, founders of Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy and the creators of the Pelvic PT Huddle. And this is Pelvic PT Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Pelvic PT Rising Podcast with Jesse and Nicole Cozine. I am so excited today to be talking with Paige Genova. She is a pelvic health occupational therapist, a member of the Rising family, and she has a really inspiring story. I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. Thinking about how she had her journey as an occupational therapist in pelvic health, how that has changed her lens from which she views pelvic health. In the last 9 months since she started her practice, she's moved into a bigger space. She has hired an admin and another clinician. She's turned it into a six-figure business. She is rocking and rolling. And most importantly, she is bringing high-level pelvic health to her home community, which was her big passion when starting Vital Pelvic Health. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this interview. So with no further ado, here is my conversation with Paige Genova. I'm so excited to be talking to Paige Genova, occupational therapist, pelvic therapist, member of the Rising family, founder of Vital Pelvic Health. Paige, thank you so much for being on with us.
You're so welcome. I'm very excited. And this is really definitely a full circle moment because I told you earlier that this podcast was like single-handedly one of the biggest reasons why I took the jump to start my own practice. So this is really cool to be here talking to you.
It was really cool to hear you say that. It was even more cool that it was some of the interviews actually that kind of pushed you into doing that. Was it just hearing someone else's voice? I think there's something really powerful about that. It's not just like, oh, Nicole and I out here preaching, but actually hearing it from people who are in the trenches and doing it can be really cool.
Yeah, I think that was it. And all different walks of life and all different kind of like backgrounds and how they got into pelvic floor therapy. And I just found a lot of inspiration in that. And there wasn't a time where it was like the universe was kind of just like consolidating all of the signs to be like, it's time now. Yeah, you need to start making this happen. So it was just very inspirational and timely to kind of give me that push.
Nice. Well, I want to hear a lot about that. We're going to definitely talk a lot about the business. But before that, just talk to me how you got into occupational therapy, first and foremost, and then how you got into pelvic health.
Yeah, sure. So the story with occupational therapy is actually quite interesting because I have a psychology degree. It's a psychology and gerontology degree, which is basically the study of aging, but it was under the psychology degree. And I knew I really liked helping people. Ever since I was little, I was like the, you know, caregiver, the one who wanted to help, the bleeding heart of my family. And so I really wanted to help people. And I really liked the medical aspect of like the medical profession. But I wasn't really sure then what to do with like this psychology degree. You know, I could have gone more into psychology and I had grad school kind of on my mind. And it was actually my brother's injury. So I have an older brother who is a couple years older than me and we are extremely close. And he went to the same college that I did. And he had kind of a string of tendon ruptures. He ruptured both of his biceps and his pecs and had to have reconstructive surgery. And in the midst of kind of like helping him do everyday activities, like with one arm immobilized, Googling, like, how do you get a shirt on with one arm? How do you brush your teeth with one arm? I started seeing all this stuff about occupational therapy. And my mom had mentioned it, you know, before that. And the seed was planted, but I just didn't really know what it was. So then once I found that kind of like Google pathway, I was like, what is this profession? And then the more I looked into it, the more I was like, oh my gosh, this is the perfect blend of like medical, helping people, psychology, creativity, all in one. And so I went and shadowed actually a PT and an OT, and both of them I really liked, but I really got into more of the OT realm and kind of chose the OT path because of their roots in like cognition and mental health and psychology and kind of like breaking down those ADLs and more of the creativity of it. And so that is kind of how I got into it. And I absolutely loved it and never looked back after that. And it is and still is the absolute like most perfect profession for me. It was made for me.
That's so cool. And you know, I feel like that's a little bit unique, Paige. I feel like, and I've done a lot of interviews with PTs, fewer interviews, although a few with OTs, I feel like not very many people actually sit down and look at both of those, compare the pros and cons and decide what's right for them. I feel like it's like, Oh, I had a physical therapy experience. I'm going that route. Or, oh, I was working with an occupational therapist after I had an accident or something like that. Now I'm going that route. I feel that's really interesting that you actually shadowed both. You looked at both curriculums and you said, you know what? Actually, with my interest in psychology, with where I'm going, I think actually OT fits me a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that at least there's a local PT program in the town that I live in. And there's really then no other OT program like within a couple hours. And I, in the hospital setting, which, you know, we'll probably get into here, that early start of my career, I had a lot of like students around me from that PT program. And I could tell that there were some where it's like, oh my gosh, you have such a knack for such an OT mind. Like if given the option, if there was a PT and an OT program for them to attend, I think there would be a good handful of them that would choose OT, but kind of they are similar. And to get sort of that rehab experience and the kind of benefits of PTs and OTs having a lot of different kind of realms they can specialize in, they have to choose PT. But I can kind of like spot the pots, the PT-OT combination people out. And yeah, I think that if more people took that route, I think people would be surprised with how many people would like occupational therapy.
That's funny. I love that term POTS. I hadn't heard that before. You mentioned that there.
Yeah. But
I think that's interesting, right? And so if you looked at it on a spectrum, so would it be like physical therapists, like the quintessential cliche physical therapist is the like super movement, running, like I want to hands-on, all of that stuff. The quintessential cliche OT is the more the psychology, the cognitive behavioral stuff. Like, and then you see a lot of people kind of who are kind of in the middle of that spectrum and could have gone either direction and been really successful in either one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good observation. And it's funny that you mentioned those people in the middle, because I wholeheartedly believe that if you are a pelvic floor therapist, you are in the middle. You are doing kind of the best of both worlds. And if you are a good, really awesome, you know, pelvic floor PT, you are pulling in these bits of occupational therapy, whether you realize it or not, with the ADL modifications and the cognitive behavioral aspect and the, what is their lifestyle? How do we modify that? How is their anxiety affecting their pelvic pain? And then on the flip side, if you are a pelvic floor OT, you're pulling in, you know, kind of the best pieces of physical therapy too. I've had to learn about gait patterns and treating the lower extremities and the hips and the back and the spine and movement patterns and all of that stuff where I feel like I'm putting on my PT hat. So I do feel like pelvic floor therapists are all POTS and we are all kind of like reaching for the same goals. We just may be looking at them through a bit different lenses at certain times. So same way that like a physical therapist who is like McKenzie certified, they are going to look at a patient with back pain and look at them through a different lens than a physical therapist who has no training in McKenzie certification and maybe is more neuro-based. And that's kind of how I feel like it is with OTs and PTs in the pelvic health realm. I just may be starting out the lens that I'm looking at somebody with like pelvic pain, maybe slightly different. I may take sort of that, you know, nervous system approach and looking at their ADLs and their stressors and their how their mental health is affecting their pain and their ability to do exercise and just look through that lens slightly different. But my end goals are the same as a pelvic floor PT, and I'm getting to that musculoskeletal assessment, but I may just be kind of taking different paths here and there. But that's all therapists, all different PTs or OTs, we all have our different kind of pathways to our goals.
Yeah, well, I love that. And I think it's going to be really cool just to kind of see where the field goes in this next decade. I feel like from a patient perspective, the more variety and more choice that patients have, the better it is for everybody. And I love that we're starting to see more variations, more flavors, more OTs, more interesting pieces of like physical therapists, like, oh, this person's very yoga based. This person, again, OT, like all of that, I think just is going to lend itself to way more choice and better outcomes for patients where they can pick who they resonate with and the approach that really works for them.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I completely agree. And I think that, you know, it's cool to see more OTs getting into it now than kind of when I started. I literally had to like Google if I could do pelvic floor therapy when I first kind of like was introduced to it. But, you know, we've been treating ADLs, which is bowel, bladder, sexual function. That's the foundation of our profession. So it's kind of like a no-brainer, like with our kind of background in the cognitive behavioral stuff and the body and the muscles and anatomy and ADLs and the toileting realm. It's perfect for our profession.
Cool. Well, I want to definitely get into your kind of career path and how you ended up starting your practice. Before we do, I got to jump back to something you said earlier about the gerontology.
Oh, yeah.
I think that is absolutely fascinating. I've read a ton of books on this stuff. Talk to me, is that part of the psychology degree? Is that a true double major? And that sounds absolutely fascinating to me.
Yeah, I loved it. I really dived into the Alzheimer's dementia realm when I was getting that. I forget what it's called. It's not a minor. It's a minor. Yeah. Is that the right word? Oh my gosh, this was like 15 years ago. I don't even remember. But I remember I had to do like a sub curriculum and meet so many hours to get sort of that gerontology's degree certification. But my degree is in psychology. But yeah, I just really love old people. I love them. And thought my grandpa is 101 and he is just, you know, killing it and aged so well. And his brother passed away at 103 and his parents at 98, you know. So I was just really fascinated with how some people age super well and independent and easily, and some people don't. And then really got interested in the Alzheimer's realm and kind of what effects it has on your brain and what precursors there are. I got real nerdy into all that stuff for a while and still really am a part of all of the journals and organizations for that stuff.
Oh, that's so neat. I got hooked on that. There was a book called Blue Zones. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it was a guy who went in and studied these different like groups of people, basically, who live significantly longer than everybody else. And I was like, And it was kind of cool because there was no one right answer, right? Some people, like one community, I think was in Asia, and they were just having rice and fish all the time. And then another one was like having red meat like all the time. And it was like really, really cool to just see how different societies were doing that. And it's like, oh, is a glass of red wine going to keep you living longer? Well, physically, maybe not. I know, right? But hey, if you're having that socially, then that's building relationship and being involved in a faith community. Is it associated with longer life? And the joke that I always tell, so my grandfather's 95. And so he always had a joke with me where he would set it up and I would finish it. He would say, research shows that people who are married live longer. And I said, yeah, whether they want to or not. But I'm so fascinated by this. So we got some stuff to talk about. Before we go, what's an anti-aging tip? Is there something that's out there in the research that we should be thinking about?
Yes, actually, something I've really been diving into lately with kind of in the new research in the past like 5-ish years is actually blood sugar and glucose and how they're starting to call Alzheimer's like type 3 diabetes and how when you have these like blood sugar spikes up and down and really unsteady kind of glucose level, then you age much quicker. It literally ages you from the inside out. And even with people who have Alzheimer's, dementia, cognitive impairments, when you start to level out their glucose and spikes and insulin levels, their cognition improves. So I think that's really interesting. And there's just super easy ways to do it. I actually, on Instagram, I follow her. She's called the Glucose Revolution. Glucose Goddess. Her book is The Glucose Revolution. It was fantastic. Everyone should read it. Super easy stuff to implement.
Paige, that is awesome. We're going to have you back on the podcast and just do an entire episode where you and I nerd out on that. Because I would love to sit here and talk with you about that. But
yeah,
people who are listening are probably a little more interested in your path to running your own practice. So talk to me about that. So you graduate as an OT. Where do you go from there? Do you know pelvic health is in your future, or is that something that sneaks up on you?
I had absolutely no clue that there was anything for pelvic floor therapy, pelvic health. In school, we got into more of the toileting, bowel, bladder stuff, as in like modifications and more of like the spinal cord nerve, like sensory realm of it. And so I didn't even know pelvic floor therapy existed. So I did my clinical at the Cleveland Clinic in their cardiac ICUs, which for the Cleveland Clinic and the cardiac realm, there was, world renowned in like the craziest things from all over the world we were working with. And I fell in love with ICU critical care rehab. And that was my passion. The higher the stakes, the more intense the situation, the quicker you had to be on your feet, the more I thrived. And so I knew that that's really what I wanted to get into. And so I came back to the Youngstown area and started working at the level one trauma hospital in Youngstown and was like, I got to get into these ICUs. I want to change the culture. Like, we're not doing it right here. I was like literally a fresh 6 months into being an OT and was like, hi, my name is Paige and I'd like to change the culture of the ICUs here at St. Elizabeth's Hospital. And I just was very convicted in knowing that like it wasn't up to standards because I had already been at the Cleveland Clinic. So that was basically the first 4 to 5 years of my OT career was all ICU critical care. And I helped to co-found the early mobility program at the hospital system. And then I, with my background in psych and being an OT, then kind of headed the ICU delirium aspect of the early mobility program. And that was it. I was in it deep and I loved it. And like I said, I really thrived in that setting and really like to push for better care in an underserved population, which is definitely parallel to kind of what I am doing now and having to kind of be convicted in how I felt and what the research said and what I knew to be true to really fight for those patients and get that program started. So that is what I did. And so prior to starting pelvic floor therapy, I had literally no experience in outpatient or orthopedics, one iota. It was all ICU critical care, which being a level one trauma hospital and being in those ICUs, it was, you were working with people who are intubated and 5 chest tubes and 3 IV lines and spinal cord injuries and head injuries and multiple traumas. So like it was the most low level of rehab. We were the beginners of rehab there. And it was like, if we sit you up on the edge of the bed, are you going to survive? Do you know you have a hand? Can you use a toothbrush? Can you, like, what does a toothbrush do? Can you bring it to your mouth? So assessing somebody's like SI joint and shoulder range of motion and like that stuff really was not on the ticket for priorities in that population. So it is interesting now looking back, obviously I've had to learn a lot about ortho and outpatient and all of that stuff, but it doesn't have to be a hard and fast criteria for getting into pelvic floor. So I then crossed paths with a pelvic floor PT actually from the Cleveland Clinic. She had been doing pelvic floor therapy there for years and she came to our hospital system. And I think that a lot of people will say that they knew about pelvic floor therapy and they were kind of like, oh my gosh, like that is not for me. I'm not into it. Then they kind of fall into it later on, whether it was their own experience or it kind of came into their laps. But for me, it was the opposite. As soon as she started telling me about what she does, what she specializes in, I was captivated, obsessed, fully intrigued, just needed to know more. I couldn't believe I didn't know about this. I was just amazed with what she was able to do and what she was saying. And it's like, it was like that love at first sight moment. You know, I'd been in that like really passionate realm of critical care, but it, especially at like this level one trauma hospital, it was really burning me out. I mean, fast. I got this like whole new fire underneath me hearing her talk. And then she helped me with my pelvic floor problems. I had a super hypertonic pelvic floor, never knew it. Like so many of my problems stemmed from it. And basically after that, it was like written in the stars. Like she then trained me and we both were doing pelvic floor therapy at the hospital system. And then I replaced her once she went back to the Cleveland Clinic. And I just owe her everything. I still talk to her all the time. She's been a fantastic mentor for me. We go to courses together. She really changed the trajectory of my career and 100% could have been like, you know, when I was like, I love this. I'm really interested in it. I think what you're doing is amazing. She could have been like, you're an OT. And this was, you know, like 6 years ago, she could be like, you're an OT. OTs really don't do this. You have no outpatient experience, no orthopedic experience. Who do you think you are? But instead she was like, you're perfect for this. You have the right personality, you have the right background. You will do awesome. I will help you. Like, you're going to do this. And for that, I'm just so forever grateful for her because she didn't have to do that. And she still is super helpful for me. We bounce ideas off each other all the time and we're really close. And I just have so much gratitude and appreciation for her.
That I love that story. You're right. That is a little bit different than a lot of folks where it's like, oh, this, you hear about it and like, hey, I want to be doing that. Like, that sounds amazing that I can change people's lives in that way. I want to go back to something that you said, which I thought was really important. And I think it's something that Nicole has harped on a lot. There's a lot of people out there who would say, oh, you needed Paige, you needed ortho experience in order to become a pelvic health therapist. You cannot be a great pelvic therapist without having this ortho background.
Yeah.
And you were kind of in some ways like double new to that piece, right? As an OT, you don't get as much of that in school and you hadn't done outpatient at all. But talk to me, because I mean, you're obviously crushing it as a pelvic therapist. And one thing that Nicole always says is like, you can't, I mean, just do the thing, get it, like work on it. You're going to get better at it by diving in. It's not like you have to have all of these prerequisites in order to start. Yeah. But obviously, like, that's an important component. How did you balance the, I'm going to go do this pelvic therapy, but I also do need to work on some of my ortho skills in order to make that happen?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I just did what I knew. And I really focused on what is something I can start making an impact on right now for this person. And then I looked at what is limiting this person? What do I know as an OT that I can make an influence on? Like, are they super anxious? Are their nervous system upregulated? And do they have a new baby at home and juggling all these ADLs? And I really focused on that and kind of my mentor, Erica, who I would ask a million questions to, and she would help kind of guide me in different directions in the beginning there. And then, I mean, I really am a lifelong learner and I just engrossed myself in public health information, podcasts, books, classes, continuing ed courses, Instagram, followed everybody, listened to everybody, anything I could get my hands on pelvic floor related. I was a sponge in those, like that first year. And then I started to really understand kind of the mechanics of the pelvis and the body and how the orthopedic end of it is super important. And I've just kind of like honed in on those skills over the years and integrated it. And I wouldn't say that I'm a huge like exercise based pelvic floor therapist. I definitely implement it obviously and do all of the orthopedic assessments that everybody else is doing and kind of make that connection. But I'm thankful for my background in all of the other things, especially, you know, OT and psychology, because I have so many other hats to pull from when the orthopedic end isn't adding up. Like, it isn't making sense. You know, this is kind of, you know, this isn't lining up. So like, let's bigger picture, look outside the pelvic floor, look outside of the hips and where else can we go from there? So I feel as though those original kind of foundations of who I am as an OT has helped me tremendously. And I just love learning. Like I took Sarah Duvall's course because it was very like orthopedic, exercise based, heavy, and I learned a ton from it. And I love implementing all of that stuff, but I kind of know where I knew where my weaknesses, not weaknesses, but I knew where I needed to learn more. And then I just learned more and I just keep learning more every single day.
I really love that approach too, in diving into it and just finding out, hey, where is a limitation here? Oh, shoot, I'm working with this person and I really wish I knew more about the hip SI joint connection. I don't even know if that's a thing, right? But then you're like, cool, who can I find to teach me about that? As opposed to thinking like, hey, before I can even help one person, I need to have all of this stuff figured out. I need to have all these certifications. I need to have everything dialed in. It's like, you're just like, hey, I'm going to do the thing. And as I'm doing it, I'm going to find out where the lack of knowledge is. And here's the critical piece. I'm going to identify it and I'm going to go put the work in to get that figured out.
Yeah. And I think I just was so interested in the pelvic floor that once I would see something, once I would see the like diaphragm rib cage connection to the pelvic floor, and once I would see the foot mechanics, how that affects the pelvic floor, once I see it, I can't unsee it. And it's just like embedded in my brain. And I enjoy it so much that like, it just clicks and I can keep going and it clicks and I can keep going. So as I'm taking all of this information in and I'm kind of learning so much over the past, you know, 5 years, it didn't feel like learning because it was so enjoyable. It wasn't like painful, you know? So that helped.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited to dive into how you actually got your practice started. Now, I know you have seen some really, really complex, especially pelvic pain people who are going to the Cleveland Clinic and then coming to you. So I know you had kind of that background in some of these really complex pelvic pain people. Mm-hmm. At what point were you starting to, you know what, I might want to branch out and do this for myself? What was the push to do that? Or was it more of a pull of like, oh, that lifestyle seems, what was it, more push or pull for you?
You know what? I think that it was more of, I'd say maybe of a pull, like it was always there. And it just like inch after inch, something was pulling me closer and closer to it. You know, looking back, I probably was always that employee that was just like overstepping my rank just a little bit and like never feeling like the leaders were quite doing a good enough job. And no one was ever passionate enough about pelvic floor for me. And I had so many ideas and I had so many things that I felt like I could do for the community and bigger picture. And I didn't want to keep working downstream. And I felt like, why am I going to do all of these things for companies whose passion and focus is not pelvic floor dysfunction? Their passion is not pelvic health, which it didn't have to be. You know, I worked in the hospital and then I worked in a orthopedic spine clinic and I started their pelvic floor program. And it's super important. It was awesome that they were really passionate about orthopedics and spine rehab, but it wasn't pelvic health. And so I was like, well, there's no pelvic floor clinic for me to take all of these really great ideas and treatment ideas and community ideas to. So I just was like, I'm going to do it myself and just kind of take that passion and not have to get my ideas approved by somebody else or have anybody else's like input, really. I just am very convicted. I'm a very decisive person. And so once I want to do something, like I'm going to do it and I want to do it like my way. So it was always a struggle for me, I guess, having bosses who didn't feel as passionate as I did.
Yeah, I think I can see that trend in your career, even just from this conversation, right? 6 months out of school, walking in and being like, you know what? We're doing ICU all wrong, guys.
Yes.
Like from that point.
Yeah, that's a perfect example.
Yeah. Well, that is really awesome. Now, when you were starting to think about this, you had two littles. Mm-hmm. You have a husband who's got, I know, a super demanding job. What was the thought process on, you know, because I know it can be a big challenge of, is this the right time? Even if it's saying like, hey, this is something I eventually want to do. Mm-hmm. But you objectively had reasons where you could have said like, hey, this isn't the right time. What were those conversations like?
Yeah, I mean, when it was really starting to be like apparent to me that this was going to be what I was going to do, I kind of made that decision in my mind. I had a 1-year-old, like 1.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old. And my husband's a power lineman, so there's absolutely no predictability in his schedule. And it's basically all based on the weather. And in like Northeast Ohio and Western Pennsylvania, we don't exactly have like super stable weather patterns. So it was never so much that like this wasn't the right time. It was more so, It's hard. I don't ever remember feeling like I couldn't do it. It was more so what obstacle or like how quickly can I get to it, I guess, because I think at the end of 2021, there was a lot of realization in my mind of how little control I had as an employee of other companies. As a healthcare worker, there was just so much happening in the healthcare world for healthcare workers and, you know, like our decisions. And there was so much just like you're getting tossed to the wind and like new roles were being made up every day. And it was just like very nerve-wracking. And as you probably have realized, I don't like to be controlled. I don't like to have somebody like be able to control me that way. So I was like, I just want to do this on my own. So that way I know I can just have control over my business, have control over my patient care. But I was definitely nervous. And there was a lot of 4 a.m. wake up calls, there still are, and power sessions through nap time. And I'm not a night owl, so I didn't do anything after the kids go to bed, but I would wake up at the ass crack of dawn to get it done. So I guess there's never really like an easy time. And my husband's work schedule is not ideal, I guess, for a mom who's trying to start her own practice on her own. But I don't think there's ever a good enough time. And I mean, like, who needs stability anyhow, right? Not me. Who needs predictability? Not me. We'll just make it work.
Yep. We'll make it happen. Right. Oh, there's a storm coming in and you've got all these evals on the books. Like, well, there's no,
you're not, I got a lot of family though. Yeah. I got a lot of family who is, they're pretty used to the lack of predictability in my husband's schedule. So they're able to help me out and I wouldn't be able to do this without them. I mean, we are so lucky to have all of our family so close because I really lean on them a lot when, yeah, there is a storm that rolls through and he's just gone.
So now what made you, as you were starting then, because we started working with you, I think even before your doors opened, what was going through your mind when you picked up the phone and called us? What was the thought process? Yeah.
There is my kind of limiting belief, and it's not something that was like, I would say holding me back, but more of a, I'm not good at this. I know that I need to be good at this and this be a skill that I need to learn, but do I have the time to learn it and do it, which was sort of the, all that like businessy end stuff. And that's always been my sort of like limiting belief is just the like the businessy end of having my own practice. I knew I could do it. I had the vision. I had the, you know, the passion for it. I knew I could get the patients in and treat the patients and build it, but would like, where would the money go? And like, what business metrics and how to use a spreadsheet? And like, what do I even need to be like thinking about from a financial standpoint? All of that was like, I know that I'm not good at that. I'm learning, but I knew right from the get-go that I was very time poor and that I was either going to pay in my time trying to figure all this stuff out, or I was going to pay in money to have somebody else help me who's already done it and just help me to get there faster. And I remember that first call we had, it was kind of that mindset. It was like, I'm going to be able to get there. I feel that in my bones, but I need help to get there to where I'm not spending as much time on the things that I'm just inherently going to struggle with, which was all that like business end kind of stuff, the logistics of it, I guess.
Yeah. And I think I actually remember. I think I remember that call where I think what I'm told you is like, Paige, I can just tell you, like, you're going to be successful with this. This thing is going to take off for you. It's just, we can help smooth that path a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's where I'm going. And I mean, you just, spoiler alert here, like, you've been crushing it over the last, is it, what are we, 9 months in? How far in are we?
So since I've been seeing patients, yes, it's been 9 months since I've like opened my doors. Yeah.
Cool. And in that time, you now have a new location. You have a new PT employee.
Yep.
You have built a 6+ figure business. You're objectively crushing it. Talk to me, though, about some of the challenges as you were first starting off in those first few months. Was there anything that was really scary or frustrating, or what were the big kind of things, the hurdles you had to overcome as you were getting started?
The time management aspect of it was super difficult for me. You know, how do I make all this stuff happen? How do I do it all? That was probably the hardest part for me. And getting over the fact that I'm not good with numbers and just start doing it like that. I've, you know, always been kind of had, I'm not a math person. I'm not a numbers person. And that really is intimidating for me. And so kind of just getting the foundation was the most important part for me. And your business foundations course, I took that before I actually reached out to you guys. And that was so helpful because I was like, this is what you need to do. This is how you do it. And like all that, like not super fun stuff, you know, the like EIN and the LLC and all of that stuff. I needed someone to just like get me through it, walk me through it, tell me the steps. I will do it. I just don't want to have to try and figure all this stuff out on my own.
I love that description of it too. And I feel like in Nicole and my partnership, it's like, I'm the not fun guy. It's like All the stuff like, okay, we're talking about profit margin. We're talking about back end business stuff. We're talking about SEO. Yeah. We're talking about taxes. And Nicole gets to come in and talk about being a charismatic leader and being out in the community and leading your team and onboarding. And it's
and
like,
I think
oh,
that's why
wah,
I liked you both so much because I, or why I went with you guys. I knew I had been listening to the podcast for a while and I knew I really resonated with Nicole's personality and her treatment style and kind of the patients that she was treating and how she was treating them. I just really meshed with how you both were talking in your podcast. You know, sometimes when you're listening to like people talk, like just, you don't mesh with the way that they're presenting the information. And so I really like the way you guys presented information. And I really found it valuable that you had that sort of like, and you enjoy the not fun stuff, you know, like you love it, you know, and it really like brings you some type of joy. And I was like, I need some of that. I need someone who really just loves that stuff because I sure don't.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I love that you had written on in one of our little surveys that we do for you guys, you were talking about when you were starting your business that you knew you liked helping people, but the thing that you've grown in is your confidence in learning skills that I thought I was no good at.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If that's not just like a perfect encapsulation of what entrepreneurship is, it's like your confidence in learning skills you always thought you were no good at. I feel like that could be the definition right there, because it is going to test you in whatever area that you're not confident or insecure or have these problems. If you're not confident putting your face on Instagram, well, you're going to get to do that. If you're not confident talking about money, well, you're going to talk about money all day, every day. If you're not, you know, comfortable hiring somebody and training and leading, well, like that's a learning curve for all of us. And I think that's one of the cool things about it. It's why I get excited about business. But man, I thought that was just a really cool, almost just definition of being running a business is confidence in learning skills that you thought you were no good at. And Now that you have that confidence, it's like, there's literally nothing you can't do. It's just, do I have the time and energy to invest in making myself better at that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, talk to me now about where Vital Pelvic Health is going. Like, as we're talking, you're finishing the expansion. Your husband's putting together furniture. Like, you guys are literally growing as we speak. Where's this thing going?
Yeah. So, I mean, even from day one on our call, I knew that I wanted to have a like full-blown clinic in our area. I never wanted it to just be me. I've always kind of liked that leadership role and wanted to expand and do more in my community. It feels like, well, our community, some of the maternal outcomes are some of the worst in the country. And so I knew right off the bat, this is kind of where I was born and raised, where my clinic is at, that I wanted to provide more value to our community. So people didn't have to feel like they had to drive to Cleveland or Pittsburgh to get really fantastic pelvic health care, that it was right here in Youngstown. And that I wanted to have a clinic where we were serving more people and we were doing workshops and community events. And that was always the plan right from the get-go. So that's kind of what this year is going to be, kind of where Vital Pelvic Health is going, is the expansion really like on my services. So hiring another therapist, you know, maybe another one by the end of the year, getting a full-blown clinic with a workshop, a space in it for workshops and community classes and doing events and community outreach and just really like engrossing in my community and making pelvic healthcare better here and being that kind of like beacon, that clinic to go to if you have anything pelvic health related. And I definitely treat a lot of pelvic pain. I would say if I had to kind of sum up what my clinic is, it's mostly more of that complex pelvic pain with some like pre and post natal mixed in, because I just really enjoy that population. But that also can include pelvic pain. A lot of them are having pain. So I also wanted to bring in a physical therapist who has a lot of that really deep orthopedic roots and really enjoys kind of that like sport athlete treatment of pelvic floor dysfunction, and have a different lens than me. So that way it can reach more people and we can provide services to more patients in different kind of varying stages of life and activity levels. So it's definitely just kind of, yeah, the sky's the limit and like expanding, but then also like really getting those roots now down, now that I'm going to be in this clinic space for hopefully a while. But I have multiple treatment rooms and I'll have my admin at the office, which will be really, really nice. And yeah, I just have so many ideas. I have so many things I want to do. It's just kind of like going for them now.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited that that is starting to come to fruition, because I know that was when we first started talking, one of your big whys of doing this is the community aspect, that you did mm-hmm. want to be providing education and changing that, kind of just going back to the way you wanted to change the ICU when you were right out of mm-hmm. school. Like, I want to change the way pelvic health is done in my area, in my community, and we can do that one-on-one in physical therapy and occupational therapy treatment sessions, but we can also do that in the conversations that we're having, in the workshops that we're doing, in just the way that we're growing that conversation. And I get really excited when you get to this part of your business, when, you know, you are kind of past, hopefully you're feeling past the, is this thing going to work?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you know, yeah. You've got that, you've got the foundation, like this thing is going, and now we can start to realize that vision. Mm-hmm. Of what do you want that to be? Oh, cool. I want to bring in somebody who's going to be more exercise based and work a little bit more with this population. I want to do more of these workshops. And you can start doing that when you have that solid business foundation, when you know this is a successful, thriving business.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like it, you can realize that vision that you've had for it. And I'm mm-hmm. really excited for this next year. Honestly, just really proud of all the hard work you've put in. I know how difficult that is. And you know, doing that while still being an awesome mom and family. I mean, your kids were what, 1 and 3, 2 and 4 when you started this? And yeah. That was always kind of, I love talking to you too. Like that was always non-negotiable. Like I want to be there for my family, there for my kids mm-hmm. While still doing it. And I think that's also inspiring to a lot of people that, you know, it doesn't have to be one or the other. You can do both.
Yeah. I've never worked 5 days a week through all of this. It was always a, like, I have to be home with my kids a couple of days a week. And so it doesn't have to kind of be the traditional like vision that people think of. Like it can be whatever you want. Like I think even in our mentorship, people are talking about like taking Fridays off. And I was like, guys, I've never worked a Friday. I don't have a babysitter on a Friday. And guess what? No patients ever fought me on it. Like, so take the Friday off. Like you don't have to explain anything to anybody. So that has been kind of cool to be able to see how I could really like stick to that and still expand in my career and my business and just like, you know, do all of the things and still be able to really be there for my kids.
That's so fascinating to me, because I think so many of us, and Nicole and I very, very much included, struggle with those kind of boundaries when you're starting off, that feeling. I don't know exactly where it comes from. I think it's probably different for all of us, but if I'm not working on my business 24/7, 365, I'm not doing enough. It's not going to grow fast enough. It's not going to survive. Was that something that you had thought on in depth before opening your doors? I just feel like you maybe have done the best job, I think, of anybody we've worked with, of having those boundaries in your mind in place and being really firm with them throughout the entire growth of your business, which I know how hard that is to do. So where did that come from?
I mean, I knew I wanted to be there with my kids. That was always like a yes, 100%. And since I had my kids, I've always worked like a part-time schedule. And we already had the babysitters in place I say babysitters is our family, like my parents, my in-laws, stuff like that. So no offense, family, you're not babysitters. You are family. Yeah. It was just sort of like, these are the days I have childcare. These are the days I don't, period. And I have to make that work. those are the days I'm going to see patients. And then the early mornings, the, you know, nap times, the weekends, the, you know, hey, I just need like 2 hours to go meet with this person. Can somebody help me out? And just making it work. And you just, those other days are not work days. They are days I'm with my kids. And, you know, it was difficult in that transition period when I, before I had my admin, and I was really like loaded up with patients and I was getting super busy and I was getting lots of calls and had to call patients back. That was probably the toughest time to keep that work-life balance, because I would be like putting my kids in the car and like locking them in there, letting them tear it to pieces just so I could like have a call with a patient or something like that. Or like, you know, like kind of shoving them in a room with the dogs and be like, everybody be quiet. And it was just super stressful in that like time frame before the admin. But once I got her, things have been much more balanced in those days that I'm not in the clinic. I can be home with the kids and just be super consistent with that. And I just never changed it from what I was doing previously. Just had to kind of add in a lot more, like whenever the kids are sleeping, I'm working hours to my life.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. We always talk about building a business that works for you. And I feel like you have done an amazing job with that. And I'm really excited to see you continue to do that, build something that works for your family, but also works for your community and does start to make those changes that you've been, you know, really passionate about this entire time. So I'm really excited that you jumped on. I think it's going to be inspiring for pelvic health OTs, for people who are doing this with young kids, for people who are wondering, hey, can I build a business without being there 24/7. I think all of those are, you know, resounding yes. And I think this is going to be really inspiring to them. So how do people get in touch with you, Paige? How do they follow you on Instagram? How does anybody who lives in the Youngstown area, who wants to live in the Youngstown area, get in touch and, you know, maybe see if there's a awesome job available for them? Yes. Just plug that a little bit, but give me the contact details.
It is always on the boards for hiring somebody. I wouldn't say that like droves of people are moving to Youngstown, but it is a cool place to live and the people there are fantastic. But I am at Vital Pelvic Health on Instagram. VitalPelvicHealth.com is my website. And if you want to work with me, you can either go on the website and call or fill out a contact form and get a hold of my admin to get scheduled. And you can email me. My email is also on my website and on my Instagram. Shoot me a DM. I really like weirdly have enjoyed social media as a way to connect and help more people. And so I'm, you know, pretty responsive on there as well. If you have any questions and want to reach out.
Awesome. Well, I hope you do, because that is, I mean, Paige is doing the thing and she's doing it great. And I'm really excited to see where this next year brings you. One fun gerontology fact before we go, because I had to bring it back to this.
Yeah.
Did you know entrepreneurs on average live 6 years longer than the regular population?
Oh, I love that. Now add in farming and having a garden to that, and you're going to 100% be 100 years old. You will make it.
That's it. Okay, perfect. I got my goals here. I got to go plant some seeds, I guess.
Yep, get on that.
I guess that's how farming works, but we'll need to have you back for the farming and gerontology.
Yeah, we can have my grandpa on. He's the goat when it comes to like using gardening to live to past 100.
There we go. Well, Paige, thank you so much for being on. Thanks so much for being part of the Rising family. Just really excited to see where the business goes in the next year.
Thank you, Jesse. It was wonderful talking to you.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed talking with Paige. It was a fantastic conversation. I think it is incredibly inspiring for those of you who have young kids, for those who are working in a rural community and wondering if a cash practice can work there, for those of you who are occupational therapists, for those of you who struggle a little bit with setting boundaries and maybe working a little bit more or having trouble with that balancing act between family and business. I think all of those are things that Paige has done a fantastic job of when she has been starting her practice. And the fact she's had such success, I think, is just a testament to the hard work she's put in, but also the way that she's thought about her business, the way that she's sought out help, the way that she really didn't have time to mess around. And so it's been really, really exciting seeing how she's growing and providing help to her local Youngstown community there and bringing her unique background, her unique lens to pelvic health. So if you guys want to get in touch with her, you can find her at Vital Pelvic Health on Instagram, vitalpelvichealth.com. And then if business help is something that you are interested in looking into, if you are thinking about starting a practice, or maybe you've got a side hustle right now that you want to grow into your main thing, or maybe you are running your own practice and looking to grow and hire and make that process a lot smoother, that is something that we can definitely help with. So we've helped now more than 200 pelvic health practices grow and thrive. So if that is something that you're interested in looking into, you can find more resources at pelvicptrising.com/business. There's a little entrepreneur survey you can fill out and somebody from our team will get back in touch with you. But that is something we're obviously passionate about, because the more people like Paige who are doing this in their local community, who are providing the kind of care that they believe in, the kind of care that fits their clinical ethos, the better it is for patients, the better it is for the profession, the better it is for creating jobs in amazing environments like that. So we're not getting burned out seeing 20 patients a day. That is what we get really excited about. That's what gets us up in the morning. So feel free to check that out. Again, that's pelvicptrising.com/business. Thank you guys so much for listening. Really glad to have you on. If you have any questions for Paige, make sure you're able to reach out. Feel free to reach out to us as well. You guys know we want to keep this conversation going, and let's continue to rise.